Take a network break, grab a virtual donut and the caffeinated beverage of your choice, and join us for our weekly review of tech news. I'm Drew Conry Murray, and with me is Greg Farrow. And this episode of Network Break is being brought to you by IT Pro TV. IT Pro TV is an easy, entertaining approach to online IT training. For a free 7-day trial and 30% off the life of your account, go to itpro.tv/networkbreak and use the code NETWORKBREAK30. All right, at last, the long wait is over. Almost a year after Dell announced the EMC Aqua merger, it's finally official.
Ah, they made it.
They made it.
Yeah, and I expressed a certain amount of dubiousness at the time, as I recall.
Yes, well, I think a lot of people did, because this was a complicated merger, a lot of debt, a lot of moving parts that had to be arranged. Mm-hmm. What are we going to do with VMware? What are we going to do with all these companies under the EMC umbrella? And I guess they figured it out.
I think so. I do wonder if we've seen the global markets turn in Dell's favor. Like, you remember when they, at one stage they were talking about raising bonds at 10%.
Right.
And you were sort of sitting there going, oh, wow, that's going to be really, really difficult and, you know, all that sort of stuff. And it turns out that the markets, of course, have – you're giving me a bond at 9% return from a blue chip company. Mm-hmm. Give me some of that. You know,
yeah,
like people are, you know, what was it? 9 months ago when it started, there was, you know, the economy was booming, 5% returns, you know, Dell was offering twice the rate. I think Dell has been incredibly lucky in the global growth has actually effectively shrunk to zero. The banks, you know, the government banks are effectively holding off from giving out money. I mean, even in America, they're talking about reducing the interest rate even further. Here in the UK, it's running at 1.5% or 1%. And basically, when the government issues bonds, they're actually charging people to take their money.
Right.
Like,
yeah,
the bond rate is actually negative.
Right, because they need a safe place to hold their money. Yeah,
that's right. So if you're an investor, you want some return for your money, and Dell's saying, yeah, we want $60 billion. You know, we want $20, $30, $40 billion to fund the buyout of EMC. That's a fair risk profile. So part of what I think is that, you know, the global economic circumstances have put some wind in that sails. I don't think investors should be very happy in overall, though. Stephen Foskett wrote a very good blog post where he said that the VMware tracking stock will look pretty good before it collapses. we did talk a lot about the VMware tracking stock and the financial engineering that's gone into this. And we've got a couple of more articles here in the thing today about what Dell's doing to pay down the debt that it took on to buy EMC. But overall, I think most people currently believe that the future of Dell EMC is very bright for the time being. They've got a chance to make a transformation by, you know, EMC was definitely shrinking. The business had no future in terms of its storage. The core business was the storage business, aside from VMware, which was growing very nicely. But even VMware is struggling to grow in its core markets. And so EMC wasn't worthless, but it wasn't going to grow. So it wasn't going to make lots and lots of money for its investors. And that changes the way the stock profile works. Merged inside of Dell, EMC can restructure itself and theoretically change direction. And right. Start getting into distributed storage and, you know, getting rid of old product lines in some way.
Well, we'll see if maybe some new leadership at EMC can help it not necessarily detach itself from its existing business, but also branch out into new opportunities and move toward where the storage market is going.
Yeah, well, the EMC division, which is now the enterprise part of Dell, leaves me, you know, that sales team is very, very aggressively and in your face, which is a big shift for Dell customers. I'm not convinced that unleashing the EMC sales force on top of Dell customers. So if you think about Dell, they've had like a come and ring our telephone line or use our website to buy your hardware.
Right.
And now all of a sudden EMC is going to put salespeople out there with incredibly aggressive attitudes and, you know, kill or be killed type purchase ordering process and, you know, going over people's heads and going around behind their backs and stabbing in the back and going wide and lateral, all that really ugly sales stuff that a lot of Dell customers haven't seen or experienced before. And that's going to be a hell of a transition for customers to make. So the question is, does that work? And the second thing is there a really substantial exodus of staff from EMC? So a lot of people are choosing not to go forward into Dell and they're exodusing into. Now, keep in mind that in Massachusetts, which is the state where EMC is, there's very strong anti-compete laws. You can't just quit one company on Friday and turn up at a competitor on Monday like you can in California. So a lot of these people aren't staying in EMC or staying in storage. They're moving laterally into networking startups or hyperconverged startups. And this is a lot of EMC's best customers, and they're going directly to competitive companies, which is very interesting, I think.
That's going to be interesting, yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, and a lot of customers are apparently the email addresses have shifted over already. So all the EMC customers have emailed their you know, all the people out there, all the EMC staff have emailed the customers saying my new address is, you know, at Dell EMC already. So
yeah, so let's talk about a little bit how this new umbrella entity is working. You've got above everything is Dell Technologies, and then underneath that are a family of businesses. There's a company called Dell, just Dell, that's for client solutions, your PCs and so on. And there's Dell EMC, that's the enterprise part. And then you've got the individual companies, VMware, Pivotal, SecureWorks, RSA, and VirtuStream. Michael Dell, he put out a video announcement last week about the merger, saying that VMware and other businesses that don't have Dell in their names are going to, quote, retain their freedom to develop their own ecosystems. But he also notes the companies are going to team up where it makes sense, including around public and hybrid cloud and IoT.
Yeah, when you get this big, you don't make one big company. Like none of the big companies, the big IT players are one company. They're really multiple feudal lords fighting over customers, right? And we've seen that continuously with HP, with IBM, with Cisco, and of course Dell's going to have that problem because bringing together a company that large into one unified thing is just not possible, especially when you've got so many business units that have enormous amounts of overlap.
Yeah.
So, you know, you just literally cannot, there's no way for these divisions not to compete with each other and to try and beat each other up for the same customers on the same deals and these types of things. And so you end up saying, you know, I'm going to make divisions and these divisions are all going to go out into the market and you hope that you can handle the problems where they overlap and compete with each other at some level or another. Of course, if you're Cisco, you actually turn that up into a feature.
Right.
And, you know, you make your customers bid for their, you know, Cisco's the winner, but you've got three different departments of Cisco in there bidding for your business. Mm-hmm. Although that, I think that's going to go the way that you can't afford that business anymore. It's not cost efficient.
Not when your dominance is starting to collapse a little bit.
And I think, you know, as your business commoditizes, you know, anybody can make a switch, anybody can make a router, anybody can make routing software, anybody can make, you know, there's plenty of competitors. So, you know, we've already seen Cisco make moves to rationalize itself. We saw Rob Soderbery, who's the head of Cisco's enterprise business unit, get kicked out this week, literally, thanks very much, Rod. Don't come back Monday. So it really reads like that, which is a sign that Cisco really needs to. And of course, keep in mind that Cisco ACI, very much an enterprise business product, all of its management was marched out the door. So I think, you know, going back to what we said before about, you know, rationalizing, cutting costs, focusing on core business units, that's very much a theme but through all the announcements for the last 3 or 4 months, I think, and certainly going to be a theme through today. So that's what Dell's going to do. I think Dell says, you've put a quote in here and it says, as a private company, Dell now has the freedom to take the long-term view. No more pulling R&D and growth investments to make in-quarter numbers, blah, 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 blah. And he goes on and on about, you know, basically it's hard to take a long-term view when you're delivering short-term results.
Right.
And my bet is that they're going to look at the bits of the business that have no growth. You know, they're static, but they're making billions in revenue and go, now how do I get rid of this?
Some more spin-outs maybe down the line.
Well, we saw that today, right? So I'm going to take a story that's a bit further down here. The Dell EMC has sold its content management division. The content management division to a company called OpenText in Canada. And Documentum is the key, is the big product in here, which was a content management solution that was really popular in the early 2000s. In my view, Documentum was originally one of the first things to be able to manage your electronic documents. You know, PDF files, Word documents, Excel spreadsheets and stuff like that. And you'd check them in and check them out and so forth and so on. And then the solution grew to include scanned documents and so forth and so on. And then SharePoint came along and gutted that marketplace. And Documentum has fundamentally been static since 2009. So EMC bought the business in 2003 for $1.7 billion. They're selling it for just over $500 million. Documentum, so just to give you an idea of just how static and non-growth this business is, Documentum says it gives us access to an installed base of marquee customers. We can cross-sell our product into Documentum customers, provides an opportunity to uplift Documentum customers to our products, and most importantly, that even if they don't cross-sell, has strong recurring revenue. That is 75% of the recurring revenues and 50% of the total revenues come from maintenance. In other words, they don't sell a whole lot of it, It all comes from customers who got it, right? So this comes back to, I've got a product which is generating, you know, good cash. It's easy money. It's not a high, you know.
Right.
That's not where we want to be. You know, this legacy software business is just, it's good money, but it's holding us back because we've got all of these people saying can't change anything because these numbers will all go wrong and blah, blah, blah. We can't innovate. So take them out, get rid of it. And this is, you know, $1.7 billion deal, 2.5 times revenue, but basically they just want to get rid of it. I don't think they glad it's gone.
Well, that's part of the issue that Dell is going to have to balance. They need to be they're now a bigger organization, but they also need to be lean enough to have a very clear vision they can take out to the market and compete on. Mm. They also are carrying a significant amount of debt, so selling off pieces like this, like a Documentum to an OpenText, makes a lot of sense. It gives them a little cash. They can either throw it toward debt or toward new product development. And you're right, it's not growth, and that's, you know, what they're looking for is growth, and so bye-bye.
Yeah, we'll talk more about the impact of selling these legacy things when we talk about HPE selling to Microfocus.
Yes.
Microfocus.
Yeah, and Intel selling McAfee.
It's a real theme.
It's arranged itself so nicely for us.
Well, it does, yeah.
Thank you, industry. One more Dell story before we move on. They are also cutting some jobs. They're planning to lay off between 2,000 and 3,000 people. That's according to a report from Bloomberg. The story also notes Dell is looking to cut $1.7 billion in cost over the next year and a half. And, you know, with a merger of this size, you've probably got some redundancies across a variety of business units. So that's an easy way to get rid of those redundancies and also, you know, take a little bit of debt off your books.
Yeah, to me, 2,000 and 3,000 people is just the accounting and HR departments.
Well, that sounds like that's where they're coming from, actually. Marketing, yeah. Supply chain, that kind of place. Yeah.
Yeah, so that doesn't – I mean, this is probably just the first wave as the merger completes and there'll be more coming.
So I would expect, announcing, yes.
Yeah, I would think there'll be a lot more coming. You know, if Cisco can cut Cisco generally wants to cut 10% of its workforce every year as a rough rule of thumb. And a lot of other companies go through the same idea that they need to trim 10% of their workforce every year, basically because they're either growing into new businesses where they hire staff and then there's these other things which need to be trimmed out that aren't doing very well. And also because you want to get rid of the dead wood in your company. So this is a chance for, you know, you're once a year to get rid of the dead wood in your department or your organization. And it's kind of well known. Not very good for employees, of course, because if you're not, you can be unlucky and just end up being culled for no reason. But to me, this is just like, sure, 2,000 to 3,000, that's just the first. I think there's going to be many, many more thousands coming as the merger completes.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised. And right now, the new company has a total of 140,000 employees. That's a lot.
Yeah, well, at 140,000 employees, you can cut 2% and only lose 3,000 employees.
Right.
Right. Yeah. Whereas Cisco is cutting 8 to 9% and taking 5,500 employees. There's a big difference at that level.
Yeah.
So this will be the first of many, I suspect, and the attrition will be substantial. But they don't want to rock the boat too hard, but they also want to cut some savings so they can keep their debt under control, I imagine.
That's right. All right, well, like we mentioned, we've got some other stories to cover, but first a quick break. This episode of Network Break is being brought to you by IT Pro TV. With IT Pro TV, you gain access to the most important tools needed to prepare for your IT certification. And Greg, you can tell us a little bit more.
Yeah, IT Pro TV is a video provider, and they have their courses available and now via Amazon Video Direct. So while subscriptions are still the best value, so you can still go and subscribe to IT Pro TV, right, and you can get everything that's in their portfolio, you can now actually buy individual ones on a piece-by-piece basis through Amazon's video if you've got that access to that service. They still have over 1,000 hours of up-to-date, high-quality video content. There's new courses being added weekly. Courses are streamed live, so they are created effectively live, and you can go and see the course for the first time, but most importantly, they're available on demand via your favorite mobile device, right? So you can watch them on your Apple TV, your PC, your desktop, whatever. Course topics include Microsoft Server 2016, MCSE, ethical hacking, virtualization, crypto, and so on, and much, much more. With IT Pro TV, you get 100 step-by-step virtual machine labs, so you can do some practice exams through Transcender. And there's one low monthly subscription price, a no cancellation policy. I got caught out by cancellation things again this week. Just nothing annoys me more than companies who say, sure, you can cancel, hand write us a letter,
right,
in dog's blood.
Yeah, engrave it on stone.
That's right. And then post it to somewhere in Indonesia, you know.
That's right.
and then there'll be a 3-month cancellation thing. Nothing annoys me more than cancellation policies like that. This is a no hassle. You just go onto the website and cancel it and you're out. So that's great. IT Pro TV, give it a look.
Check out IT Pro TV to upgrade your brain with the most popular IT certifications. Premium subscriptions are normally $57 a month or $570 a year, but there's a special offer. If you visit itpro.tv/networkbreak and use the code NETWORKBREAK30, you can try it free for 7 days and save 30% off the life of your account. All right, thanks, IT Pro TV. Okay, so we do have a theme this week. HPE is selling software to Micro Focus. They are selling, I think, up to 5 of their software units.
Yeah, they're selling out a bunch of HP software. Now, this is a division that has been, more than problematic from my point of view for quite some time. They believe that they own all software inside of the old HP business unit. And it's a bunch, again, of these legacy software products that have enormous install bases, things like HP OpenView and so forth.
Right.
And all of those business units have been bundled up and then flogged off to a company in the UK called Micro Focus. Now, Micro Focus is owning 49.9% of the business. HPE still owns 50.1% of the venture. Nominally, the deal's valued at $8.8 billion, but that's you can question that all you like. The reports that I've seen in the blog posts, the various articles that I've read have suggested that that's an incredibly optimistic valuation.
Yeah.
But Micro Focus has basically said, very similar to what we heard with Dell a few minutes ago, which is, you know, it's an excellent business unit, many, many customers. We can switch them over to other products. There's very high sign-ups. Fundamentally, they're moving this business outside of HPE so they can focus on infrastructure. And that's exactly what we've seen HPE doing, you know, devolving HP out. You know, here's the PCs and the desktops. That's a non-growth business. Getting rid of the legacy software businesses, moving that out to Micro Focus. We've seen HPE spin off a whole bunch of stuff lately. So I'm not at all surprised. I think it's a great move. Get rid of these legacy software and let the company focus on infrastructure, especially private cloud and hybrid cloud infrastructure. Remember, they also sold off their professional services recently as well,
right.
And that was a business that was in deep trouble.
That's right. Yeah, and just to note, HP took pains to say we're not getting out of software. We still have things like HPE OneView, which is automating data center infrastructure management, and their HPE Helion for sort of hybrid cloud. So they still want to be known as a software company. They're not jettisoning a software business entirely. It's just taking these legacy markets. I think you're right, aren't growth, and they want to focus on growth. So they're cutting them off. Although it's not entirely a spin out because they're keeping a controlling interest. They get to have an HPE person on the board. They get to nominate half of the directors of this new company. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think they're still maybe looking for some return down the line. They still think there's value here, but it takes it off their books and it lets executives focus on moving forward.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, I'm not too worried about this. If you're using this piece of software from HP, it's not like this software is bound to the hardware. You know, it's not part of the BIOS of a HP C-class chassis or, you know, it does leave some questions over some of the hardware that HP sells, like the things that run HP UX and the Superdomes and, you know, the old Itanium stuff that's still got some problems. If you're running that, you're probably concerned because you're using software that might be running on those platforms. Mm-hmm. But overall, you know, I don't think this will make much difference to HP's bottom line. They've still got control of it. So if Micro Focus fumbles it and there's some blowback that's happening, then HPE has 50.1% of the venture, so they can make sure that the customers are being, you know, it doesn't come back to bite them.
That's right.
So, yeah, I think, again, this seems to be this consistent theme of the big vendors are focusing back down on infrastructure. So, you know, the old days of being everything to everybody and having professional services and software and trying to take over your entire IT infrastructure, that's passing away. I think public cloud is eating away at that business model and saying, well, why would you pay HPE and Dell and IBM or Cisco to do that for you? Why wouldn't you just go SaaS? Mm-hmm. So these companies have to react and, you know, take these legacy software assets. And I think also this thing struck me over the weekend, which is we've got these new software paradigms. Like all of these pieces of software are written the old way, waterfall, you know, top down, years and years of development cycles, and they, you know, require massive effort to install.
Right.
But you look at what, you know, WhatsApp is doing, and they have like 50 or 60 people running one of the biggest applications in the world in containers.
Right.
Right. So if you were going to build software today, you would do it with a much smaller team using DevOps-y type principles. You'd probably run some part of it with a back end in the cloud and a front end on site, some part of it in the private data center, some part of it in a public data center. You would have a completely different language, a completely different development cycle, very lean, very, you know, you can see these companies, there are people out there producing products that can compete against these legacy platforms and just cut the legs out from under them at a fraction of the price and do it better and more modern and not be stuck with, you know, IE6 support or something.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly right.
So I think these companies are being very smart to say, although these legacy assets are making us buckets of cash and bolstering our bottom line, we need to get rid of them and move forward to the new area. We need to be, you know, developing software that's modern and fancy and containerized and DevOps and starting again. So just cut these off, throw them outside, get some cash for them while we can, and then start moving on with the next generation.
And sticking with that theme, we have a story about Intel selling off its McAfee unit. They're selling it to an investment firm called TPG. The deal is remarkably similar to what HPE is doing. Intel is getting $3.1 billion in cash, and they're keeping a 49% stake in this new independent company. So in other words, they're selling the unit, but they still own nearly half of it.
So they want to be careful that whoever they're selling it to isn't going to mess it up. And the brand gets, you know, the Intel brand gets damaged. Same with HPE here. Although Dell EMC didn't hold anything back when it sold out Documentum, but there's not much linkage, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
So again, I think this is, you know, get rid of the legacy software. TPG is a rent extraction business model. They're not a turnaround specialist, if I remember right. I could be wrong here. I'm going a little bit off the cuff, but a rent extraction is where they take the asset internally and they just basically try and extract the maximum amount of profit out of it while it dies. A log and well-established business model.
They're starting off very interesting. A part of the deal is that McAfee has to borrow $2 billion to give to Intel for Intel selling McAfee. So you've got this new independent company already starting off $2 billion in debt.
Nice.
So, hey, good luck. And I think, you know, what I think is Intel bought McAfee back in 2010 for $7.7 billion. They're selling it for less than half of that. So the reason I think they're keeping a stake is that if this TPG company can recoup, maybe they're hoping to recoup some of that money back by holding a stake if, you know, this new company can find a buyer for it or they just can do some more squeezing of it, some of that money will go back to Intel.
It's also possible that the, you know, borrowing $2.2 billion is just financial engineering. So if I'm a private investor or a hedge fund or, you know, venture capital type thing, if I got them to buy $2 billion, I might loan them the $2 billion and make money on the loan. So I would broker loans with various other people and then take the fees. And I would earn, you know, brokering a $2 billion deal is a $50 to $100 million revenue opportunity.
Sure.
Right. So even if you're not buying the business, even if you're just selling the finance for that, you're going to make out like a bandit before the company even starts to operate.
Right.
So a lot of the times these, you know, borrowing $2 billion is a way of generating fees for the organizations involved in the sale, if not the actual owner. So he's already lumbered the company with $2 billion worth of debt and extracted money out of the organization in the process without actually hitting the balance sheet.
Yeah.
It's kind of dodgy, but that's what they do, right? And so now what that company has to do is then pay back the $2 billion using the rent extraction.
Yes.
And you get your money in year one and then you're out, right. Gone.
Yeah. Or year two or three, depending on how well McAfee does. But again, they've got a legacy installed base that they can pull revenue from.
Yeah, well, McAfee had a lot of different business units when it was bought back in 2010. The question would be, you know, short of doing a deep dive into the thing, which is impossible in the time available, how much of the McAfee assets are being spun back out? Like McAfee had Secure Computing, which was a firewall product.
Right.
And, you know, is that going back out too? I would guess it is, but that business has decidedly shrunk over time because it didn't really thrive under Intel's management.
Mm. Yeah, not to mention entire consumer side.
So yeah, you know,
home security software.
Desktop antivirus and that stuff is a dying market as people move to smartphones and tablets. So,
yep. All right, one more story. Samsung is selling its printer business to HP. That's not HPE, it's HP for $1.05 billion.
So same thing. If I was Samsung and I was making money out of making handsets, like I'm effectively one of the biggest players in the Android market, why am I making printers?
I didn't even know Samsung had a printer business, honestly.
It's very popular in Asia, I think. I read another couple of articles from around the place. Apparently, Samsung's printer divisions employ 6,000 people.
Wow.
Of which 1,300 are in research and development. So that's almost 20%. Like, that's almost one quarter of the population is in research and development. So that's great. It recorded $1.8 billion in revenue, but it also included HP was at pains to point out that it got a compelling portfolio of 6,500 printing patents. Oof. So, yeah, there you go. It does sort of stink of like buggy whips being the best buggy whip manufacturer, but I tell you what, there's an awful lot of money in Printerlink and Glaser consumables in the next 20 years.
Oh, for sure, for sure. Yeah, that's where all the money is, in the ink, and maybe that's what those R&D folks are up to, is finding new ways to make you pay more money for ink.
I think it's going to, you know, it'll be fine. That Samsung wants to focus on its core business of making silicon much more down in the fundamental levels, focusing on the handset market, which I think they're being moderately successful at, aside from the Samsung Note 7s, which are apparently bursting into flames at random intervals when charged. And so apparently on planes now it's being asked, people are being asked not to turn on their Samsung Note 7s. They must turn them off now and not have them on during the flight.
Yes, that's not good marketing. That's not good PR.
No, no. And there was another great bit of gossip. Apparently one of the they have $36 million worth of stock sitting on a shipping – on a ship somewhere. And the line that owns that ship has actually gone into receivership. So now the ship is stuck in the middle of the ocean and not able to land because it can't pay docking fees.
So there's actual stock certificates on a boat somewhere.
No, it was phone stuck stock. In the ocean. 36 million of phones. Of,
oh, yeah. Oh, material, yes.
Yeah,
okay.
Of product ready to ship in for the Christmas period.
Oh, no.
And because the boat can't land because nobody can pay the docking fees.
Oh, ouch.
Yep. And the boat can't, you know, and it's got no money now for food or any sort of supplies. So apparently it's in a bit of a diabolical situation.
Oh, dear.
Yeah. Once you're outside of the – like, whose problem is it? Interesting. That's one.
Very interesting. Huh. Yes. All right, I'm going to have to go look.
So Samsung's having a bad week.
They're having All right, well, we've got some more news to cover, but before we do, I want to take a second to let listeners know about a couple of newsletters that Packet Pushers produce, including you and me, Greg. First is Link Propagation. That comes out every Friday. We put in links to interesting tech news that we find because Greg is a voracious reader. He's always coming up with stuff that we just don't have enough time to cover in the show. We've also got blogs from tech blogs from people across the tech industry, new product announcements. So if you're interested in getting sort of a weekly news update outside a network break, check out Link Propagation. There's also
That's just links, right?
Just links. So all not, links. Yeah,
just links. Just no, links. No commentary, no pseudo-intelligent ramblings from us. It's just links.
That's right.
You can decide whether you want to click on them or not.
That's right. Yeah, it's up to you if you actually want it. If you don't like our filters, then just go right to the links.
That's right.
There's also Human Infrastructure. This is a biweekly newsletter all about life in the IT trenches. And Greg, you can tell us a little bit about it.
Yeah, Human Infrastructure was my I started it like about a year ago. Did we start it?
I think so, yes.
Yeah, about a year ago. And the idea was that we don't often recognize the humans in infrastructure. And so that's why I called it Human Infrastructure, because humans are just as important as the latest switch or server or bandwidth or whatever it is. And so this newsletter is very different. It's very much focused on people and humans. So it talks a lot about issues that we don't cover anywhere else, like career or, you know, personality things or coping with stress or things like that. And I know that sounds a little bit odd and it might not be your thing, but we also, I also embed some links in there, particularly to research. So I read a lot of research papers and industry news and videos and sometimes stuff. And we do fun surveys, which are kind of good fun. That's you.
That's right.
That stuff. So it's not your normal, it's not a technology newsletter. That's Link Propagation. That's this show. It's just where Ethan, Drew, and I get a chance to talk about people, because you know that's really what Packet Pushers is all about. Ultimately, is about making sure that people in our community are supported in some way.
That's right. Yeah. So there's back issues online. If you want to go check it out, you can go to packetpushers.net/human-infrastructure. That's also where you can sign up. Same thing for Link Propagation. packetpushers.net/link-propagation. Again, you can see back issues and you can sign up there. And note that we do not sell or share your contact information. If you do sign up, we're going to keep it to ourselves. We don't hand it around.
That would suck.
That would suck.
It would be one that certainly, you know, we whine about it enough, about privacy on this show enough. The idea that we would sell it for money. That would be not cool.
That would be a little bit two-faced, I agree.
Yes. We're not at that level. We're not at big business levels of two-facedness quite yet.
That's right. Soon.
Maybe one day.
Maybe someday. We can dream. We can dream. We can dream about selling out our beloved audience someday.
No way. No, not no. You might.
Just kidding. All right, back to our news. Cisco buying ContainerX. This is a very small container startup company, just 8 people. Cisco didn't say how much they bought them for, but ContainerX is a container management company.
Yeah, so not a lot of information on ContainerX. I've been through their website, did a bit of stuff. It's sort of like an enterprise-class container solution. It looks roughly to me like Mesosphere by orchestrating the end-to-end provisioning of containers. It's a little bit baffling to me because Cisco already has various orchestration tools already, including container orchestration tools in an open source project called Mantle. Mm-hmm. So I'm not 100% sure why they would buy a competing product to one of its existing strategies already. And Mantle is an enormous open source project that's tied into a thing called Project Contive and the FD.io project for the virtual switching. So it's a little baffling. But either way, ContainerX works on ESX, AWS, Azure, and Bare Metal. So it's a good hybrid cloud option. Sounds a bit like Mesosphere, right?
Mm-hmm. And also, Linux and Windows, so you get the hybrid strategy there.
Yep, and it uses Active Directory for role-based access control, which most open source solutions don't. So everything else, probably the biggest single feature is multi-tenancy. So Docker, at this point, if you're a Docker swarm, multi-tenancy is not a part of the solution. And it looks to me like ContainerX might have focused heavily on this idea of multi-tenancy. So you can carve your developers up into tenants and restrict what they can get and keep them isolated. And that way you can mitigate your security risk. Because only enterprises have many developing teams, whereas most small companies only have one team, one product, and enterprises could be managing hundreds of separate products inside of a single portfolio. And you really need multi-tenancy, not because you have multiple tenants, but because you have multiple development teams all doing different stuff.
That's right. Yeah, so I also looked over the website, and the impression I take away from it is they want to be the vSphere of containers. It's very enterprise-focused, and that makes perfect sense for Cisco because they're so wedded to enterprise customers. And I think hearing you talk about all of the open-source pieces that Cisco's trying to put together in these various projects, I feel like ContainerX is a very simple story, very easy to tell. It's not trying to package a bunch of open source things together. It is very enterprise focused. It sounds like it's going to be a very simple kind of software sale, and that makes a lot of sense for me for Cisco if they want to get into the container game.
Yeah, and the question for me is, do they want to get into the container game, or are they going to actually take this on board and say, do Mesosphere and say, right now we offer Mesosphere. We've also got this, and we've got, Cisco seems to have one of everything or two of everything, right?
Well, that's the thing, because we don't know where and how containers are going yet. It's still the Wild West. People using containers are still sort of, I don't want to say rogue elements, but they're folks sort of at the cutting edge. I don't know how far it's into the enterprise yet, or if it is in the enterprise, the enterprise.
If it is in the enterprise, it's probably the Rebel Alliance.
Right, it's the Rebel Alliance, and IT gives them a couple of virtual machines and says, go do what you want with the containers, just have them in this VM layer so that we know how to manage that. That's what it seems like ContainerX is going. They want to be that IT, management control touch point that gives the developers a little playground to do crazy stuff without taking down the rest of the business.
Yeah, I think so. A little hard to tell. Maybe whether Cisco's buying ContainerX as a product to add to their portfolio or as an acquihire isn't clear to me at all. So I'm not too sure that I would say it's a product they're going to sell.
We'll see. They got 8 people out of it.
Mm-hmm. So almost certainly an acquihire then, I would lean towards.
Could be.
Seeing as you forced me into making a prediction.
Right. Well, you may also, you can take this how you want, but I read on the website that the CEO, went after the acquisition, let folks know that ContainerX has turned off product downloads for the time being and suspended tech support as they figure out what's going on in this acquisition. So I don't know what that says to you.
Acquihire. If you're going to keep selling the product and you've got revenue attached to it, then buying 8 people sounds like a good exit. I think the container market is pretty much turned to Kubernetes, with Mesosphere as number 2 and Docker as having going to struggle to turn its, although it's got an early start in the container format, I don't think it's going to win in the container format right now because Kubernetes doesn't have a profit motive. Mm-hmm. So, Google did all the development around Kubernetes. It's got very strong technology underneath it. The community is very active around Kubernetes in terms of container orchestration, and Docker wants to get Docker Swarm out They want people to start using Docker Swarm. I think Kubernetes has just got too much of an advantage in sort of the fundamental technology and the fact that it's free. And, you know, there's not going to be a crippled open source version with a commercialized version above it. It's just going to be, this is what you get.
Well, I guess I'm going to say I think there's room enough in the market for an enterprise-oriented container solution that has all the support and the hand-holding and the confidence that comes with a supported product that some mm-hmm. enterprises are going
to
look for.
Yes, and I think you'll be able to buy Kubernetes distros that will do that in the future. In the same way that if you want Hadoop, you can buy Cisco Hadoop or Hadoop's Hadoop or, you know, many other different flavors of Hadoop or so forth that you want to run, and they will give you the support and everything that you want. Mm-hmm. So okay. I think it'll be Kubernetes in the long run, but we'll wait and see.
We will.
It's a little too early to pick that for sure, but I'm so far leaning on Kubernetes to win. Right. That's $5 on that.
you picked out a story about Sky. That's an internet provider in the UK. They're going all IPv6.
Yeah, just to show you that, yes, I know a lot of IPv6 is being deployed by ISP. There was a rash of these announcements this week. This is just one that I managed to capture before I yawned and fell asleep. they say they're completing their rollouts to IPv6, which is good in the sense that, but I do wonder just how many people have got IPv6 enabled endpoints in the house, and whether they are Wi-Fi units like the home routers are actually IPv6 enabled. Want to have a bet?
Sure. I'll bet that not very many do.
They're probably sitting on some $20 device that was bought 5 years ago going, it works. Why would I change it?
Exactly.
So it's still going to be years away for me. But the fact that the backbone support it means that now we'll start to see a much more gradual take up as, you know, those devices get rotated out at whatever rate per annum. There's a chance that IPv6 will become the default stat, you know, connectivity for normal people's computers in the home.
We'll all have it just in time for IPv12 being rolled out.
No, IPv6 is just going to be gradual. I think the real kicker is when we see IPv6 in the enterprise, and my guess is that that's still a decade away mm-hmm. or more.
Long process.
The enterprise vendors just aren't serious about doing IPv6 at all. There's no driver for them inside the enterprise. So even though you'll be doing IPv6 on the internet, sure, fine, knock yourself out. You just won't be doing it inside the enterprise. It's just no value to that.
Well, maybe containers will help bring IPv6 more into the enterprise.
No, it'll help drive overlay networks. So you'll just get an overlay network and have overlapping IPv4 address spaces. That's it's a hell of a lot easier. Because I think the chances of people doing IPv6 versus I can have IPv4 in an overlay solution, just get an overlay solution. It'll be easier. I can use it here. No, seriously. Yeah.
No, I would also take that bet. Mm. All right, our last story is on cloud workloads. A survey by the analyst firm 451 Research, they're predicting that 60% of enterprise workloads are going to run in the cloud, some form of the cloud, by 2018. Currently, 451 is estimating that 41% of workloads are running in either private cloud, software as a service, infrastructure as a service, et cetera.
Yeah, again, for what definition of workload and for what definition of cloud?
Right.
So these headlines are always very suggestive, and it makes you want to run off and spend several thousands of dollars or tens of thousands of dollars to buy these reports, only to discover that cloud means private cloud or anything based in a colo.
Well, I have to say when I first saw the headline, I thought, wow, infrastructure as a service is really going to explode. But in fact, they say that's actually the lowest use right now, just at 6% currently. With private cloud and software as a service at 14% in terms of cloud workloads. And in fact, software as a service is going to grow 23% for running enterprise workloads by 2018. Private cloud, they're predicting, is going to stay flat. Infrastructure as a service is going to double, they say, but that's only going to hit 12%.
Yeah, I've always said that private cloud is going to be flat because we can do more with less. Mm-hmm. We've got more hardware to do more computing in the same amount of space. And that's why we see, you know, companies like VMware increasing their prices on their products to try and sustain revenue growth. But I don't think there's that much there. I don't think the enterprise needs a whole lot more than what it's already got. And with compression and modern software development techniques and stuff like that. I mean, even in a, keep in mind that we're in an era of zero business growth, mm-hmm. right? So you aren't seeing IT budgets increase at 10% per annum because there's zero business growth. Very few customers are investing extra in IT. They're just saying everything's zero, so everything's zero. IT budgets stay the same. I don't think they're going to overinvest. So I did read some interesting stuff that's in this sort of thing. It's another research company which said that Cisco accounts for over half of all spending. And then you get into it and it says spending on branded data center switches, that's i.e. no white box, in the data center. In this category, Cisco is only half of that market. I'm going, like, that's a pretty niche definition of market. But, yeah, I think, this type of stuff is – you know, the headlines to grab your attention, and hopefully the press will write about it and people like us will talk about it. I would like to understand, when they say workloads, do they mean VMs? Do they mean compute cycles?
Right.
And do they mean, and does cloud mean private cloud versus public cloud versus hybrid cloud? Does it mean what? Does it mean, because a lot of people say, I'm just moving out of my physical data center into a colo still, right? There's still, I think I read, like, even today, just 40% of companies have stuff in colo facilities. Mm-hmm. And a lot of companies class colos as cloud still. as they migrate much. Away from private data centers and closets to colo facilities, which, by the way, makes perfect sense for most people. You get access to a colo facility, makes perfect sense because of access to bandwidth, and you share power, and you can always blame someone else if the power goes out. That's really right. important because That's it's right. hard to keep. Yeah. Yep. And when you can blame someone else and just hold your hands up and go, oh, I did the best I could, put it in a colo. So, yeah, questionable. But I did see some interesting stuff come out at VMware, where they said that most colos are located within 5 milliseconds of AWS. So there's something like 50% of all colos are within 3 milliseconds or 5 milliseconds of an AWS facility. And so hybrid cloud might become a possibility. Now, I've always said that it's effectively, I don't think there's enough bandwidth in the world to be able to migrate workloads from cloud, private cloud, to public cloud and back again, but because of latency and because of bandwidth. But if latency is not a factor, maybe I need to rethink that. So I'm hoping to find more stats in the near future.
Okay, maybe, yeah. And it is disappointing that a more accurate headline would have been, more companies will use software as a service in 2018.
But I think that is definitely true.
Then
I think
we wouldn't have talked about it, though.
Well, I think the trick here is to understand that venture capitalists are funding SaaS more than they're funding products. So what they're saying to people is, don't build an open source project. Or if you do build an open source project, attach it to a service and then put it in the public cloud and then sell the service.
Yes.
Because you can then monetize your open source that way. So by all means, build an open source database like Hadoop, but then build Hadoop as a service and sell it to people that way, and that's how you monetize.
Yes.
Right. Because if you make a version of Hadoop that's open source and then cripple it and then have an open source plus, which is proprietary, that's very hard to sell. You have to build a sales force. You have to get people out there burning shoe leather in front of enterprises trying to get through the door. And you've got to reach developers, not only developers, but you have to reach CIOs and infrastructure people, and that's very difficult. So just turn it into a service, and then life's a hell of a lot easier. You can start to get revenue through the door much earlier.
That's right.
So if VCs start to spend money that pattern, then products will come to market as services, not as products. Mm-hmm. And inevitably, people can only buy what's on the market. Salespeople only sell what they have. So guess what? The market will transition in that way. Yep. They're not going to the cloud for that reason. They're going to the cloud because it makes sense for the venture capitalist to be in the cloud. Because remember, when you're in the cloud, the cleanup is zero. You turn it all off and you walk away, and you can have a $500 million company and then you can just switch it off and walk away and there's nothing left. You don't have to sell any assets. That's right. Just some desks and some leases. That's it.
Right. Some spare cases of Coke.
That's right. If you don't have a data center to shut down, then life's a lot simpler.
Absolutely. All right. Well, that takes us to the end of this episode of Network Break. Greg, where can folks get more from you if they want it?
People can find me on packetpushers.net. I'm going to be moving more and more of my writing there instead of being on my old blog at etherealmind.com. And you can find me on Twitter, where I've been prognosticating at length this morning. And apologies for the lateness, again, travel related. So what we try and do is just as soon as we try to record this every Friday, but personal lives and things like that, travel sometimes conspires against us. So the schedule will keep moving around. So stay on your toes, audience. You are smart people. It doesn't matter if we don't publish on Monday.
That's right. But this will go out on a Monday. So we'll keep to this schedule. But yeah,
sure.
Apologies if we threw off your listening.
Yes.
I'm Drew Conway Murray. I blog at packetpushers.net as well. You can also follow me on Twitter at @Drew_CM. Thank you to our sponsor, IT Pro TV. And thank you for joining us for this episode of Network Break. If you like the show, please give us a like on Facebook, leave a recommendation on iTunes, or share a link with your colleague, because that really helps us. And please check out our newsletters, as we mentioned, Human Infrastructure Magazine and Link Propagation. You can sign up for free at packetpushers.net. Thanks for listening.